Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. I'm very happy because Molly Apple and Joe Dunn are returning as my guests. They were on this program November 17th. So this is a part two, and they are relationship coaches, lovers, best friends, and authors of award-winning books, The Soulmate Experience, A Practical Guide to Creating Extraordinary Relationships, and the newly released sequel, The Soulmate Lover, A Guide to Passionate and Lasting Love, Sex, and Intimacy. Welcome again to this program.
Hi, Hello. Nice to be here.
Yes, good. And we're going to focus on a course that you have online, and it's wonderful. I was watching the YouTube videos and other materials you have, and it is on jealousy. Hmm. And jealousy, of course, can show up in no time at all, and many people are feeling very insecure about it, embarrassed, angry, even out of control. And so this can be both intense and exhausting. So how is it? I mean, some of it's revealed on that wonderful YouTube video that you two did about the Swedish girl that appeared at your conference. But how did your interest, in addition to that, how did it begin, the issue of jealousy?
Well, it's a chapter in our book, and yes, it's a very important part of relationships, and so we knew it had to be in there. And I think just, you know, the story that came up about this woman at the conference was just the perfect opportunity for us to really explore jealousy.
Mm-hmm. Ourselves, yeah. Yeah, it's been something, it's important to me because it's something that I dealt with early on in my earlier relationships. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's so controlling. And as you said, you know, it's humiliating to some of the ways we behave when we're feeling, you know, when we're in the grip of this just super powerful emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that,
sometimes.
Yeah. And I spent years delving into the causes of it for my own edification so that I
yes.
could behave differently and not have to experience that.
And for you, Joe, were you did you experience that as much as your partner?
I did experience it, and you know, I think in most of what we talk about in regards to jealousy is something that's perceived to be going on. You know, I had other experience where it actually was going on, so it's a little bit different mm-hmm. thing to deal with. But so yeah, I did. It did experience quite a bit of jealousy, and so this exploration that we did and the course helped me tremendously too, because, you know, we all get to look at our role in it, and I got a great opportunity to, so it was good for me as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Joe, it's important, that distinction you were making there, that in most cases, when we're feeling jealous and we're being controlled by these emotions and not sure what to do, we're just imagining something that isn't happening. It's not mm-hmm. even real. And that's the great majority of situations involving jealousy, and that's what we're talking about. If you're dealing with something like you were talking about, Joe, when, you know, your partner really is out having other relationships, that's a whole different beast.
Yeah, it's a little more complicated, but
mm-hmm.
but a lot of the same emotions come up, a lot of the same feelings, you know.
Yeah,
same jealousy.
So. I've had I'm thinking about one client, and he was in a relationship with an older woman, you know, 15 years older, but he described her as a real fox, and so. But he had not very much tolerance for longing, and he seemed to have a good amount of insecurities about relationships, and so in a style that's not uncommon for men, in my experience, this client of mine converted his vulnerability into really angry determination. And it actually had, because he went after being jealous about his older woman lover who had not been in touch with him for a while and was on a business trip, he went to her house and he, to use his words, he fucked her without mercy until she begged him to stop. And so this for him, it was kind of an erotic use of anger that happens especially in males. It's the neutralization of anxiety. But it has footprints of anxiety all over, of jealousy all over it.
Sure.
And but it did seem to intensify their sex because the anger was combined with insecurity.
Yes. Yes.
I just wondered, was it as good for her?
Good question.
Apparently she said yes. because she was more attentive after that. And, I mean, they weren't living together or anything. But, yeah, it was good. But what about this? You know, you've got a mixture of, vulnerability and angry determination and jealousy and insecurities.
And I like the idea, if it's useful to fire up their passion, I mean, I could imagine them using this together, this idea, and creating stories together just between themselves, role-playing, using that tendency for him to take anxiety, jealousy, turn it into this fiery passion. Why not harness that?
It sounds like they were partway there. Partway in that direction, but not fully there, where it was a fully connecting experience.
And fully conscious, a conscious use of his anxiety tendency to turn that into something. You know, I really feel like it's something that they could explore together. And aside from looking at, in those situations where he's imagining she's doing whatever and she's not actually doing that, you know, that might not be the best way to go about it and just attack her without her having any clue what's been going on in his mind that whole time that's creating this.
But if it's something that they co-create, is what you're saying, Molly, in advance, then...
Yeah, to actually use that, you know, to do some role-playing around it and see if they can harness that energy in that.
And that's what your course, your 23-day course, addresses in part. You do that and many other things. And over the course of this program, we're going to talk about that. But that first thing, to understand why our typical responses of jealousy are ineffectual and potentially destructive. The case that I just gave you shows that it was... it was mostly destructive. I mean, they worked through it, and it helped that I was their therapist.
It could have gone badly, it sounds like.
Yes. It could have.
Yeah,
and then you also talk about, in your 23-day course, that you can acquire the essential keys to freeing yourself from the pain of jealousy. So maybe you want to talk a little bit about freeing yourself from the pain.
Yeah, so let's just start where you just were, is that our typical reactions are usually not going to bring us closer together. And yet that's what we're after with all of this. What we really want is a connected relationship with our partner. But so he demonstrated one, the anger. There's all kinds of reactions we might have. We might try to get our partner not to do certain things because we know that's going to put ourselves in a position to feel jealous. For instance, if our partner's talking about, I'm going to go out with some friends after work, we might know that that situation typically results in, you know, if it's me staying at home, worrying and fretting about who he's talking to and is he attracted to anyone and all of that. So that makes me so crazy that I'm going to try to talk him out of doing this thing that he wants to do. This is just one example of a way we might handle it that could be totally detrimental to our relationship. because this person ends up feeling like, oh, I can't, I'm not allowed to do these things that I was allowed to do before I was in a relationship with you.
And so it takes on that permission giving kind of thing, which a lot of people who are mature and independent really don't like.
Yeah.
You know, I have to get permission to do this.
Joe, I know you have something to say about this.
That doesn't sound like much fun at all.
Yeah. Have you, Joe, have you had any experiences around this?
Not for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've never really felt like...
That's because you've been with Mally, and right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no, not even a whiff of that, you know, need to check in with each other, you know. There's just so much trust.
I do remember you talking about Joe not even feeling comfortable talking to the waitress.
Yes, yes. Similar to a getting permission thing, you know. I didn't have permission to just talk to anybody that was out there in public because I would get the look. And that look spoke volumes
mm-hmm.
about what I wasn't supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough to, it's tough to live in that, you know, under that, you know, feeling or that expectation is what it is.
The expectation.
Yeah. The expectation that I'll toe the line, only look, you know, at this one person. And
what I've noticed is that outside erotic interests can take three different forms in committed relationships: flirtations, dalliances, and affairs. And really, flirtations are the mildest sexual interactions outside the primary relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty close to universal and usually harmless. Usually harmless. People don't always realize that. Unless one partner, and this is what you deal with in your course, becomes upset by witnessing flirtatiousness activity on the part of the other or hearing about it even secondhand. But so any observed flirtations can be unsettling, of course, for people that are possessive and insecure.
Yes.
Because it turns out these are concrete reminders that the flirter finds others sexually appealing.
Yes.
And therefore might consider going further.
Yes. And so here's the gem.
Mm-hmm.
When we can recognize for ourselves the truth of this statement, my partner is attracted to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And totally embrace that as part of being human.
Mm-hmm.
We get this opportunity to use that fact instead of fighting that fact.
Mm-hmm.
And as
Joe, we talk about transforming the energy of jealousy.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Joe speaks so eloquently about the fact that most people have this fear that if I allow, as though we could disallow someone from looking at someone else, but if I allow my partner to be interested in other people, then he's going to want to go off with them. That's the biggest fear of all.
Mm-hmm.
And
the reverse is really true.
Yes.
Right? If you're restricted or prohibited from
mm-hmm.
looking at someone else or flirting with someone else, then the draw becomes intense to do that.
If you're restricted, it's because it's sort of a taboo thing, and so it takes on more eroticism for some.
Yeah, probably for a lot, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's that forbidden fruit.
The forbidden fruit.
We want what we're told that we can't have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, where conversely, if we're allowed to feel these very natural feelings and attractions...
Mm-hmm.
And engage our partner in that whole experience, it can be a very, very connecting thing.
Yeah, I've realized this not only in my marriage, and this is a late husband, very sadly, but Charlie and I were both extroverts, and we had a very social life, and he was a flirt, and I was a flirt, and we would flirt at parties and then take the energy home. Mm-hmm. And I get to experience that in my relationship now of 5+ years, and my fiance Brian, who is so open, and so am I, and so it's even better. But we're both pretty secure people, and we've realized that flirtations can have positive effects. You know, it can be very gratifying and empowering for a partner caught flirting, say at a party, to see his or her partner become jealous. And we didn't experience this, but in some of my clients, because flirting really can stimulate passion. We did notice this.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Partly because it's the mate's desirability, and it's somehow enhanced by outside confirmation, and also because, you know, for some, there are mild undercurrents of uneasiness and irritation that can act as aphrodisiacs. But in other words, look at yourself if you're uncomfortable at a party and your partner is being flirtatious and getting attention, and then take the energy home.
Exactly. That's just a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah.
So it does require a few things.
Mm-hmm.
So being self-aware, what am I mm-hmm. telling myself? What are my fears that are surfacing and causing this feeling?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, do we have a relationship where we can talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
Can I share with you what I'm feeling at the moment? Are you able to take that in and say, hey, yeah, let's take a look at that together?
Mm-hmm.
When we're able to do that, And I've got a little story that came up as you were talking. A few weeks ago, Joe and I were out at a wine bar that we like to go to, and he went up to order us a couple of glasses. Mm-hmm. And a woman sitting there, an attractive woman sitting there, started to have a conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this opportunity. And I actually walked around to get a position myself so that I could see Joe from her perspective, so that I could see what she was seeing as she was engaging with him. And Joe's just a super friendly, happy guy. People like talking to him. And
comes
you can
across
see it
on the videos. I've never met the two of you in person, but you're a very attractive couple, both of you,
well,
and
you.
Very friendly. And you can see that you have a deep and lovely connection. Just
we
the
do.
Way you look at each other and the way you talk to each other and explain all of this.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Great.
It's a joy. I put myself in a position so that I could watch him, and I actually even imagined that I wasn't there, that it was just Joe was there, he was there on his own, and he was struck up a conversation with this woman so that I could feel a little bit of that energy, like, ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, she likes him. Ooh, she's seen what a great guy he is. And I'm like, ooh, I like the way that feels in my body. And it's because Joe and I have that connection that I can totally play with that myself and let that emotion come up. And as you said so eloquently, take it home.
And I bet you did that night.
Oh, are you kidding?
Yeah, and so that upped the volume, so to speak, of your sexual passion.
And Diana, I'd like to say one thing too.
Yeah.
And that is that, you know, because of this relationship that we have where I'm free to do exactly what Molly was describing to you,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like there's no chance I'm going to go off with this woman because, you know, my thought is, this woman's probably not going to be like Molly and let me go, you know, flirt with somebody if that's what
mm-hmm.
comes up for me,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it's like this gratitude and appreciation for Molly being who she is that makes it, you know, extremely, extremely unlikely that I'd be tempted to go off with this woman. You know,
Well,
I think
that harkens back to the fact that you have a primary relationship that is very secure. So
the
flirtations with others aren't going to be so difficult.
It's very secure, but it's almost like it's secure because of that, because Molly is allowing that. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's the what I, you know, always come back to is that, you know, the more we restrict somebody, the more they're likely to go off and do mm-hmm. it or flirt when you're not looking or whatever, even in something mild that you don't like, looking at the waitress as she walks by, right? They're just going to be surreptitious about it. Where, you know, in my case, Molly being so accepting and allowing, I would never want to leave to go try to find somebody else because nobody's going to be that accepting and allowing. So
I, when I'm talking to clients about this, I sometimes will open up my palm of my hand and I'll say, okay, so imagine there's some sand in the palm, and when you grip your fist up, what happens with the sand? It seeps through the fingers. But if you keep an open hand, it stays.
Yeah.
It stays in the palm.
Not only that, if you grip the sand, it's going to start irritating your hand after a while.
Well, that too. Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds, I get the impression that the two of you are very communicative and very open and not restrictive, and you can, that doesn't mean that you want your partner to be having sex with other people, but it means that you can tolerate flirtations and, again, take the energy home.
Yeah, more than tolerate. I think what's important here is that this takes a while to build.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You build this kind of trust through experiences together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do it a little bit at a time. It depends where your own comfort zones are. Everybody's got their places where they're uncomfortable. So, you know, we always talk about finding your edges, and they're going to be different for each of us. And
mm-hmm.
finding a way to play with these energies at that place together.
Mm. Finding a way to play with those energies.
Yes.
At the edges.
Yeah, so for one couple that we worked with, they just to sit in a public place and look around at other people walking by was an extremely difficult, challenging, almost terrifying thing for the two of them to do together.
mm-hmm.
You know, they tended to go places and have these invisible blinders on where they're never allowed to look away from their table or each other. And they both knew that this was not working. They were feeling more and more constrained all the time in this relationship. And so we talked about going to the most harmless of places, not downtown Las Vegas, but a library, and you sit comfortably and allow each other to just look around at other people. So that's what I mean by playing at wherever is where your edges are.
Okay, and do you ever incorporate PDAs into that in your coaching, public displays of affection?
Yeah, as opposed to SDAs, sexual displays of affection.
Oh yeah, right. No, I mean, some people will enjoy playing at those edges, like if they're in Hawaii and they'll decide to make love on the lanai, mm-hmm. and there's a possible bit of discovery.
Yes.
But that adds to the heightened eroticism.
So
they might be
discovered between the couple, PDAs mm-hmm. between the couple. So here's an interesting, you know, because of the research we're doing for our next book, we're uncovering all of these different kinds of things that are going on and exploring them to see what, you know, what are people doing here, people who are exploring these edges. This particular little party was a party set up, and you had to, you know, get invited to it, but it was for couples, and it was for people to be able to dress in like lingerie for women, and for men whatever's comfortable along those lines, and just, you know, have a party together where there were hors d'oeuvres served and they had conversations, and it was just to be able to look at other people. There was no touching, no sex going on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that kind of a thing, absolutely. For me, this is an exploration that for me is ongoing for the rest of my life, because it's what keeps a charge between two people
to
be exploring at that edge. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. keeps the life in it.
Keeps the life in it. And a lot of couples do like, some couples don't want to do public displays of affection at all. And I see, because I'm in Seattle, I see a lot of high-tech people. You know, we have Microsoft here and Amazon.
Sure.
And of course, you're also in San Francisco, so you see a lot of high-tech people. What?
Well, I said we're close to the high-tech people, yeah.
Of course. And so you have, I mean, the stereotypical engineer is usually a little closed down about PDAs.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Depending on where they were raised, especially.
Yeah. What's been your experience with that, Molly?
With engineers?
Yeah, or where they were raised.
With where they were raised is a big, that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
The influences of our family and our upbringing and religious, cultural. So, yeah, absolutely. But I do like playing with that. I'm really happy you brought it up. I mean, from just the simplest thing of holding hands is very uncomfortable for some people.
Mm-hmm.
So by experimenting with this, it might just be, well, we're having a conversation. I put my hand on your arm for a minute.
Yeah.
And have you feel what comes up for you? Like, if we can, this is the same thing with looking at when jealousy comes up for us. What comes up for us mentally? What are we telling ourselves about that? Generally, it's something like, oh, what are the people at the next table going to think if she's got her hand on me for too long? You know, are we trying to look like teenagers by holding hands and walking down the street together, or just, I haven't done this in 30 years, it's really uncomfortable.
Right. And some people who are even over 50 will find that in a new relationship they're much more comfortable together with PDAs, and it's exciting. Maybe the former relationship, the person was very, very private and very adverse to public displays of affection. Mm-hmm. And it can be exciting.
You know, touch is mm-hmm. so essential. It's of all the essential things in life, there's food, water, shelter, and human contact.
Yes, that's right.
If we don't get that, we atrophy. Babies, you know, die without human contact when they're left in an institution and nobody touches them. It's that essential to life.
It certainly is.
Joe and I, there's a particular restaurant we go mm-hmm. to, and we found out.
I knew you were going to tell the story.
You want to tell her what we heard?
This was after that swim meet, right? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
When you were rubbing my back and...
Oh, no, I was just talking about when we found out that the waitresses, when we came into the restaurant, they would look at each other and say, ooh, who's going to wait on the affectionate couple tonight? They liked waiting on us because we're always touching.
Yeah, and you exude sort of a playful energy.
We do, and I don't think we ever really think consciously about PDAs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just, I think, do them. And, you know, we did get chewed out one time. Molly was giving me a back rub in a restaurant. We had just come back from a swim meet, and I had a sore shoulder or something, and she was rubbing me. And someone was very uncomfortable, a woman, and came up and talked to us about it and asked us not to do that.
Really?
Yes.
Yes.
This is in San Francisco?
I was really taken aback.
We were extremely taken aback because it's in a restaurant called Pizza Orgasmica.
Oh, my goodness.
Where every pizza, the pizzas are named things like Doggy Style and Kama Sutra. And
yeah.
I can't even remember them all.
Farmer's
the back
daughter.
Door.
Yeah.
Why was this woman there is the question.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was a good question.
Yeah.
She was definitely not comfortable with PDAs.
I had to wonder if she would have.
It's such fun to generate playful energy, sexual energy. And I'm guilty of it with my fiancé pretty often. We go out and have a wonderful dinner with exotic foods, and we are playful. And the wait people usually are fine, and they
and
appreciate
it. And a lot of times
it
can be contagious.
Yes.
Right, to the people around you, and they'll start picking
right.
it up too. I think more often than not.
Yes.
We just happened to have one interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
at pizza O.
I have a question for you, Diana.
Yes, what is that?
About age, I had wondered if that particular woman would have come up to us if we'd been 30 years younger. Do you think that as people get older, people are less likely to want to see them touching in public?
Oh, I think it's very possible. And I think one reason, because Brian and I are both officially senior citizens, we're a little unusual to be sort of affectionate and playful and laughing over dinner. And so people, we frequent certain restaurants more than others, and they sort of know us. And we often like to have a table that's sort of set apart, if we can get it. But because we're older, we're a little more unusual. And
what great role models.
How we feel. How we feel. And to answer your question, Molly, I think that, you're young, but if you were in your 20s, maybe it would be overlooked a little bit more. But I think we have an obligation almost to put it out there that people can be happier if they're affectionate and demonstrative and laughing together, couples who laugh together, last together, all of that. You know, we need to put it out there that love, you know, and there's enough love to go around. Come from a place of abundance.
Yeah.
I feel that same way towards sexuality, that we need more playfulness in our sexuality.
We
it's so damn serious.
Yeah.
And serious equals boring eventually.
Right. Too serious, too boring.
Yeah.
It's really true. And I see so many couples with mismatched desire. And, you know, sometimes I'll say, when was the last time you guys had any fun? They look at each other. Because we know that fun that a couple can have.
Yeah.
Translates into more sexual activity very often.
Sure does.
Yeah, and sex is play. You know, ideally, sex is play.
Yes.
Molly was just saying that the other day, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. To me, outside of, we're going to conceive a child together. I mean, obviously, sex has many, many, many different dimensions, probably an infinite number. So, you know, to the point that we can have this great, intimate, deep spiritual connection through it. But even with that, I feel that element of playful is always there for us, and it just feels essential to keeping it fun and desirable for both of us.
Yeah.
That's great. That really, really is wonderful. You have, going just revisiting your course, your 23-day course, which people can do online, you also have, as part of your objectives, discover how to transform jealousy from an experience of disconnection to one of increased connection. Well, we've been talking about this as we've been going along, but I have found that couples where I've worked with them for a while and then they become more erotic with inspiration, they can employ simple tricks to invigorate desire. And even techniques that could be provocative. Or, you know, sometimes they've done this in the past, they're hurtful to their partners if they're revealed. For instance, I have found that more than a few committed men and women engage in harmless flirtations, which you've already talked about with others, and some of the partners become jealous. But then we talk about why. Why are they jealous?
Exactly.
And it often has to do with insecurities that go way back.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
In their
and
lives.
In the course, that's one of the very first things that people investigate is where all that stuff came from.
Yeah. Talk more about that, Molly.
So one of the things you might look at is what were the messages you got when you were young about jealousy mm-hmm. or about what to do if your partner looks at someone else with interest? And it's amazing what people can uncover from, you know, movies that they remember to how their parents behaved to actual things their friends said and did when they were young around this. And I think even today, it's even more ingrained in us when I look at what our daughter is, 16, 17, and to look at the shows and the movies that these kids are watching, and she helps us because she knows what we're interested in, and she'll say, look at this scene. Just immediately, if you were dating someone for 3 days and they look at someone else, you're supposed to go totally ballistic. And everybody's supposed to fire at this person that you can't be looking at someone else. You're dating them now. And I was just like, this is what we learned. If this is what we learned and had ingrained in us, how could we expect ourselves to react in any other way but with jealousy?
Yeah, society and the media and our family, they're not doing us any favors when it comes to how we're supposed to react.
Well, that is certainly true. And a lot of people grow up with an anxious, in terms of parents, usually the mother is a little more, in early childhood, a little more influential. So if the mother is anxious, she often translates a lot of anxiety to the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And she might even be an overprotective, even helicopter mother. And so this anxiety can permeate lots of the adult relationship, and it often takes some work to get through this. But, you know, anxious people often really want a romantic, committed relationship, but sometimes in the early stages they can be perceived as overly needy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They want it so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I say to my clients, let's distinguish between want and need. Ideally,
yeah.
You should be able to say to somebody you're serious about in the early stages of a relationship, you know, I want you even more than I need you. I can live without you. But, oh, my goodness, I can live so much better with you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I can live without you, but better with you. And that takes a certain amount of self-esteem and confidence, and doesn't it?
Yes, yes.
To be
absolutely.
Able to say that.
Which
that I can be self-sufficient.
You can build that through that awareness, growing
mm-hmm.
your awareness of who you're being in your relationship, and taking a look in the past is helpful sometimes to say, where
mm-hmm.
did I get this idea?
mm-hmm.
And does it really work for me? That's another
well,
question.
Well, that's right. Have. It doesn't work for me anymore.
Yeah.
And often it doesn't, really.
Yeah. So another thing to look at is, in your past relationships, how have you reacted when you felt jealous? What exact techniques, I call them, have you used? We could interrogating, attacking, denial, withdrawal, all of these things that we do to try to stop feeling this way, which basically involves pointing a finger at the other person and saying, you need to stop doing what you're doing because it's making me feel this way, and eventually taking responsibility for those feelings ourselves is what's going to give us the power to step out and behave in a totally new way.
Absolutely. You express it very well. But sometimes people in these states feel really stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But how have you reacted when you've been jealous?
Right. You know, let's look at these typical 8 reactions people have, and can you identify?
And what are the 8 reactions?
So those are a few of them. So let's say interrogating. Where were you this afternoon? Who did you see there? What did they say to you?
Uh-huh.
You know, have you ever done that?
Mm-hmm.
Attempting to get your partner to change their plans. And often we do this without actually being explicit or honest about it at all. Oh,
just manipulating it.
Yeah, manipulation.
Uh-huh.
We can't go to that party because my mom really wants us to do this.
Mm-hmm.
When have you been manipulative to try to steer clear of a situation in which you were pretty sure you were going to bring on jealous feelings by what you thought about when you walked in the place?
So,
and then taking a look at how did those behaviors play out? What were the result of you behaving in those ways? Did they take care of the situation? Did they alleviate their jealousy? Most importantly to me, did they heal you of that so that next time that happens, you won't have those feelings?
And how did they make your partner feel?
Yeah.
Those feelings of jealousy.
So find that often the person is able, after examination, is able to say, no, it didn't heal me.
Yeah.
It made me more anxious.
Made me more anxious, yeah. More worried, yeah. Because then you've got a partner who's resentful. So now you've got that added in the mix. They're, you know, whether they speak it or not, they're feeling constrained.
Mm-hmm.
By whatever behaviors you've done to try to alleviate your feelings of jealousy, they're feeling the pressure. And
or maybe
so
the
your
suspicion
relationship
that
is,
you have, right?
What'd you say?
Or maybe suspicion that they're doing something, right? I mean, I've operated under that where it's been really, really tough to have somebody suspicious of what you're doing when you're not doing anything.
Hmm. How do you feel towards them?
Yeah, you resent them.
So your relationship has just deteriorated a little bit further.
Well, if somebody is constantly suspicious, it erodes at the erotic aspect of the relationship and the intimate aspect, too.
Yeah.
To have this constant suspicion and jealousy. And I have, well, at least one couple in my practice now where she suspects him of infidelities, and he did have a lapse, but they have passwords for their phones for everything.
Hmm.
And he comes home and he just hands his phone up. You know, 10 years ago, I never had these problems, but now with smartphones and people can also keep track of where their partner is at all times, you know, if they've got the right application beyond me to know about this. But anyway, so in this particular couple's case, his self-confidence has just been eroded immensely.
Huh.
And she's just constantly suspicious of him. And, you know, some couples, and this is what I'm working with them toward, but some couples emerge from dalliances, this would be a dalliance, or affairs, that's something a little more serious. And they can emerge from this and make it stronger because they understand each other better and they're trying to be more romantic and transparent with each other and so on. But when I have found that even with non-monogamous couples, and these are couples that have some agreements, but like monogamous couples, they really need comfort rather than ridicule when jealousies and insecurities arise. And
Absolutely.
They also need reassurance often that their relationship is still primary.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
what they need. Their relationship is still primary.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't help if the person who's been betrayed is just constantly spewing ridicules and negative descriptions of the other.
So are you talking about when we've got a couple and one of them is very jealous mm-hmm. and the other one ridicules that person for
yes.
feeling that way? Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things, you know, we talk about in, if we're going to take a relationship where jealousy is an issue and transform that into something they can actually use, both mm-hmm. players got to be up for working with this.
Yeah, no ridicule.
And with no ridicule, right.
That doesn't make any relationship more connected, whether that person has, you know, had a dalliance or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we would say, yeah.
No, because it undermines the other's confidence, self-confidence,
sure.
a lot.
Which is the problem in the first place, right?
Exactly.
I go into it feeling, having some sense of low self-esteem or insecurity, mm-hmm. and my jealousy comes up in response to the thoughts I'm telling myself of what might happen, and then I get ridiculed, and it erodes it even further, yeah. So
yeah.
It takes two.
Yeah, they're
two.
Probably not quite ready to jump into something like non-monogamy.
Joe, I didn't quite hear. What was the first part of what you said?
I said that couple that has got that ridicule going, you know, even just
yeah.
one direction, is probably not at all ready for something as challenging as non-monogamy. I mean, monogamy is tough enough. I don't know if you were still talking about the people who had agreements, you know, outside of monogamy, but
it's really true. You know, to have an open relationship is very difficult. And I work with some couples that are trying to structure that. It can work, but what it requires is that both people have a lot of self-confidence, a lot of sexual confidence, they communicate well, they consider their relationship the primary relationship, and sometimes they'll have threesomes. And so for some couples, it's, we'll only do this in, we'll only have extra sex in front of our primary partner, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for others, it's all about negotiation. Of course, life is about negotiation, but if this is going to work, it really requires a lot of good communication and negotiation.
And it has to be, every step to me has to be something that both people are feeling positive about.
Mm-hmm.
Where we've seen this breakdown so many times is one person is trying to convince the other. And the other
yeah.
doesn't really want to do things this way. That tells me the connection isn't there to make this a good thing.
I agree.
Yeah.
If the connection is really there, they can do anything. Anything will work.
Yeah. But as long as sometimes they need to talk about it, of course. And
they would, I think, if that connection were there.
And develop some ground rules.
They would naturally talk about it if they
mm-hmm.
had a connection.
Part of a deep connection is that deep, deep level of communication.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and actually, you know, what we're finding, and we've been interviewing a lot of people about this in particular, is that when there's that really deep connection, really deep level of communication, they don't need rules because they're able to have this continual dialogue, continual understanding of where each other is and desire to have each other feeling great about whatever it is they're exploring.
And do you find, I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
So do you find with your coaching that you can help couples get to this place?
Well, it's a giant leap for a lot of people. Yeah. Because they don't already have in place this deep level of ability to communicate, to accept whatever's coming up for their partner, to be there to assist their partner and yet not take responsibility for their partner. So all of those things really kind of have to be in play. It's kind of a tall order for a lot of couples. I think one of the problems is that we have a model of monogamy, and then over here we have this open relationship / polyamory thing, and we have nothing in between. And so a lot of people that are feeling frustrated and bored in their primary monogamous relationship are trying to take this huge leap over there to open relationship or polyamory without having the tools and the connection to survive it.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, it's very complicated. And in my experience in working with couples who are anticipating opening their relationship, and we have a local guy who has a nationally syndicated column, Dan Savage.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Savage Love.
Mm-hmm.
So he came up with the term monogamish.
Yes.
That couples who are treasure monogamy will occasionally open their relationship to another. But they do talk about it quite a lot.
I think you would have to have it
work. Yes, to do it.
And I think for the couples for whom that's working, just one experience like that can give them a lot to talk about for a long time. That's exciting.
Right. And one of the dynamics that I've seen, I mean, I don't see it because talk therapy in my office, and then I hear about it. If they go to a swingers group or whatever, I hear about it. And what I've often seen is that maybe the wife or the female partner dragged her feet at the beginning and then went to the party and discovered she got lots of attention. And her partner, her male partner, did not get as much. And then the jealousy arises about that. And then she wants to do it more than he does. And so
that's great.
It's like it switches.
Yeah.
Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, relationships are complex, for sure.
And hella fun.
Yeah.
And a lot of fun, and especially if we're having really hot sex.
Especially
That's
then.
True.
Right. It really helps us stay connected and merged. And, you know, there's evidence, research that shows that couples who have frequent sex have fewer conflicts. And when they do have conflicts, they get over them faster.
I thought you were going to say that they just had sex.
Well, sometimes they do. You know, some people wonder about makeup sex. Well, I explain that when you're angry, your hormones are up, your breathing is up, everything is kind of accelerated, but it's very similar.
Yes.
When you're angry, it's very similar to sexual arousal.
Yes.
Right.
And that's why makeup sex can be exciting.
And that's why jealousy can be exciting.
Exactly.
So it's
because
just channeling it into something a little bit different.
Yeah,
right? So
to reinterpret.
Channeling that anger into sex or channeling that jealousy into passion or excitement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the two of you are having a lot of fun.
We're having a blast.
I hear that.
Yes, we are.
So when I write this up, as I did on the 17th of November, I will give people the website, which is thesoulmateexperience.com. Mm-hmm. And people can go there and then get links to your to your YouTube videos and to reviews of your books.
And the Jealousy Course, and come visit us at our playgrounds on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, talk about that, the playground at Facebook and Twitter.
You know, we over the, gosh, I think 4 or 5 years we've had our Facebook page, there have been several couples who have met through the Facebook page. I don't know how many of them.
Really?
Yes. I don't know how many stayed together, but I know that there are friendships, many, many friendships ensued, and people have dated that they met on our page. It's really been just an incredible experience to have that little community, and we hear from people who, we heard from a woman today, honestly, from, she's been on our page for at least 4 years, and she says so often, finding your page changed my life.
That's powerful.
It is really powerful. Unbelievable, you know, when we just started putting out our little messages and had no idea what kind of response we would get over time. And there are quite a number of people out there who have told us similar things. So it's been really, really gratifying.
Sure has. It's been great.
That's lovely. I'm going to ask the two of you to do something that I ask my couples to do occasionally at the end of a session, and we're coming to the end of the show.
Love it.
And I call it Sweet Nothings. And so I want you each to take a minute to tell the other what you love and appreciate about. So, Molly, what you love and appreciate about your darling Joe. And then Joe gets a chance, too. Because Sweet Nothings, I mean, so many couples, by the way, just need to be so much more positive and appreciative, right?
Well, I have a huge smile on my face for you asking me that. He is the most adorable, sweet, generous, kind, funny, the guy makes me laugh constantly, human being. And his body is rock hot. I am telling you, he works out like a maniac, and he is the hottest. How old are you?
57.
57-year-old on the planet.
So he's, well, he's also a swimmer, I know that. But that's lovely. Lovely. Okay, Joe, your turn.
A tear coming out of my eye.
Oh, see, people need to hear these things more often. All right, Joe, you get a turn.
All right. Gosh, this radiant beauty that Molly has that is just constantly coming forward in her, I just love the fact that her whole existence is about bringing other people up to a higher level, besides being an incredible lover and beautiful and the same kick-ass kind of body, which are all just kind of superficial things, but just this, she's such a radiant beauty and wants to do so much good for the world. I just love that about her and a million other things.
Well, I think you two are exceptional, and you have a lot to offer the world, and I do thank you. There's the music, so we have to sign off, but I do thank you so much for coming back to this program. We'll do it again in the new year.
Okay.
Sounds
thank
great.
You.
Thanks for having us, Diana.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. Bye, everybody.